Out of His League by Tony Frazier. As printed in the anthology Daikaiju 3, Giant Monsters vs. the World from Agog Press. So just what do you plan to do about this? Jill asked. I plan to have another beer, I answered. I guess this wasn't what she wanted to hear, because all she could do for a moment was drop her jaw and make this stunned sound. Well, not really an but I can't spell the exact sound she made. Maybe I could with one of those foreign alphabets with sounds you don't find in English, but then you probably wouldn't be able to read it. She finally found her voice and said, "But you're a superhero." "I'm not that super. Look at that thing." I waved toward the TV behind the bar. On the screen, a gigantic thing stood amid burning wreckage downtown, somewhere near the riverfront. It looked like a cross between a beetle and a man. It was basically humanoid, two arms, two legs, one head, but it was mostly covered by chitinous armored plates with leathery skin visible between. As we watched, a National Guard tank fired a shell at the creature's chest. The armor plates moved suddenly, drawing together to form an almost seamless shield over its front torso. After the shell burst harmlessly on them, the plates drew back to their former positions. The news reports put it at anywhere from 60 to 80 feet tall. They weren't sure. After all, it wasn't as if they could just ask it to stand against the Empire State Building and make a pencil mark at the top of its head. I wish they could, because that would mean it was in New York City instead of my hometown, causing me problems with my favorite bartender. "You know what would happen if I tried to fight that thing?" I said. "You ever see Bambi Meets Godzilla?" Jill shook her head at me. "Do you ever get off your couch and go outside?" "It's a recliner. Besides, I'm kind of retired. Now how about that beer?" "You're cut off," Jill said, taking my mug. "And if you're retired, then why do you still wear the costume?" She had me there. "Okay, fine. I'll see what I can do," I said, dropping off my bar stool. "But it's not going to be much. I'm more a team player than a solo guy." "We've seen how well that worked out," she said. "I'll get your tab." "No, you'll hold it till I get back," I said. "It's the least you can do for sending me off to my death." "So you're offering to do what exactly? Hit him with your laser beams?" Colonel Fox couldn't stop looking nervously at my hands. I couldn't blame him, really. If I was stuck next to some dude with big metal energy blasters grafted to his hands and forearms, I wouldn't be too trusting either. They were the real reason I still wore the costume, even though I hadn't actively fought crime in years. The driller beam generators don't go well with jeans. There was no way I could just blend in like some guys. I took a deep breath. I'd spent 20 minutes talking my way into the National Guard command post, and now it looked like I'd be spending another 20 trying to convince them I could help. Hell, I hadn't even convinced myself of that yet. "I'm not really sure what I can do, Colonel," I said. "This thing's a little out of my weight class, but I'd like to help in any way I can." Major Bronson, sitting next to the Colonel, asked, "How specifically do you think you can help, Mr., Digger?" "His name's Digger," said Captain Crown from over by the map. Crown had been introduced to me as the S2. Bronson was the S3. I had no idea what that meant. "You used to work with the gods out of L.A., didn't you?"
"Used to."
"Well, where are they?" asked Colonel Fox. "Can we get the rest of them here?" "They all died," I answered. "But you survived," Crown said. I shrugged and said, "I do that." "So what exactly do you do?" Major Bronson asked. "Other than surviving, I mean." "I'm pretty fast, kind of strong," I said. "How strong?" "I could pick up a car, but I can't throw it," I said. "Well, you know, maybe a Mini Cooper or something, but that probably wouldn't help. I can see in the dark and climb walls like a bug. I use these to dig tunnels." I held up one hand to show off the driller beam generator. "Can you dig a pit? Trap him?" asked Captain Crown.
"Screw that," said Colonel Fox. "Can you dig through him?"
"If the tanks couldn't penetrate his armor, I doubt I can," I said. "And I'd be working days to dig a pit that big." "So you can't stop it?" Major Bronson asked. I shook my head. "So why are you here exactly?" My bartender cut me off. "Colonel Fox," called a radio operator in the corner. "That thing's changed direction. It's coming this way now."
"It's moving north?"
"Directly toward us, sir."
"Why would it do that?" the colonel asked.
"It's chasing me," said a voice from the doorway. We turned to see a haggard-looking man in his 30s, escorted by two MPs. He held up a stone idol of a squatting man, maybe 2 feet by 2 feet. "Actually, I think he's chasing this."
"Who are you?" asked the colonel.
"Ray Quesada," the man said. "I'm a professor of archaeology at the university. I found this on a dig on Avatu Island in the South Pacific.
And how do you know it's after you? Asked the colonel.
The islanders on Avatu have legends of giant beasts that guard their island, Quesada explained. That giant beetle man is one of them.
But how would it know where the idol is? The colonel asked.
It's hollow, I said, staring at the idol. Everyone turned to look at me. There's something inside it.
X-ray vision? Captain Crown asked.
More like a sonar deal, I said, shrugging. I spend a lot of time underground. It helps to know what's in front of me.
We're wasting time, said Major Bronson. Who cares why it's here? The question is, how do we kill it?
But we don't have to kill it, I said. Ever seen Mothra? We just give it what it came for and it'll go away.
Quesada blanched and turned to shield the idol with his body. Colonel Fox just shook his head, sadly.
Sorry, son, I make it a policy not to negotiate in situations like this. You give them what they want, it'll just encourage them to do it again next time.
What next time? I asked. It's a giant bug man thing.
It's the principal, he said.
Okay, before this goes any further, we need to get you out of here, Professor, said Bronson. You're endangering our personnel.
Wait, I said. If that thing really is chasing the idol, then we can use it to lead him wherever we want him to go.
Like where? Asked Crown.
Like out of town, for starters.
I studied the big map of the city mounted on the wall, and then I spotted something.
No, wait. I have a better idea.
You guys ever see King Kong?
Professor Quesada told us the beast's name was Oroaku or something like that, but to me he was just another thing. That's the superhero life, pretty much. You're always fighting one thing or another.
I heard the thing before I saw it. Hell, I felt it before I saw it. The vibrations from the creature's footfalls shaking the ground and making the Humvee sway and creak on its springs. The specialist driving me swore and fought with the wheel as we rounded a corner. And then the thing was right there, a quarter of a mile away, and just huge. The Humvee jerked to a stop.
This is as close as I get, sir, the specialist said.
No problem, I said, and got out. You'd better get out of here. You don't have to tell me twice.
Good luck, sir, he said, and drove off. I stood alone in the street for a moment, suddenly unsure of what I was doing out here. The thing looked so much bigger in person than I expected. Oh well, if I was going to die, better to do it moving than gaping. I ran toward the creature. It had eyes on stalks that protruded from the top of its head. As I ran toward it, the stalks both twisted so the eyes could look straight at me. At that moment, a tank rumbled around the corner behind the thing. The eye stalks twisted around to look back at the tank. I was forgotten for a moment. As I watched, the armor plates on the thing's front drew apart, leaving a huge expanse of skin exposed right over the center of the chest. I could imagine the armor plates on the back drawing closed at that exact moment. The tank fired at the thing's back, but the shot had no effect that I could see. The armor plates in front returned to their original positions. By this time, I was so close I was looking almost straight up at the thing's chest as I ran. I almost tripped and fell flat on my face. Wouldn't that be a great way to die? Trip and fall, then get stepped on before I could throw a punch? What a loser. Better concentrate on my target, I figured. The eye stalks rotated back to look at me again, but by that time I was close enough to leap at the thing's ankle. I flew 30 feet through the air and stuck to the creature's leg like a spitwad. Maybe I couldn't punch this thing out, but with any luck I could hobble it, put it on the ground with a broken ankle, and leave the army to do the heavy lifting. I fired up the driller beams and took a shot at the armor plates protecting the ankle. Nothing. I scorched the surface, but that was it. Time for Plan B. The thing stopped and looked down at me, perhaps debating whether I was worth the trouble of swatting. Before it could make the decision, I began to scramble up its leg, counting as I went. The creature leaned back, trying to keep an eye on me, clearly confused as I ran up the pelvis, up the torso, to the center of the chest. It finally decided to swap me off, but by the time its arms began moving, I had leapt away to stick to a nearby building. The thing turned toward me, raising its arm to smoosh me against the wall. I'm rather allergic to smooshing, so I jumped onto its arm before it connected, then back to the spot on the center of its chest where I'd jumped off. I began running down, counting again. When I reached the foot, I jumped off and scrambled toward the nearest building, a luxury hotel. As I ran through the opulent lobby to exit out the far side, I could hear the building collapsing behind me. I pressed the talk switch on the radio headset Bronson had given me.
Okay, I'm good. Get the professor moving.
Are you sure this is a good idea? Quesada asked me as we stood side by side at the end of Tell Square, which was not really a square at all. It was really just a big traffic circle hemmed in by tall buildings on three sides. And in the center of the circle was the Progress Monument, a big wedge-shaped obelisk rising up to a sharp point 30 feet off the ground. No, I said, but you guys turned down all the good ideas. This is what's left. Thanks, he said, clutching the idol to his chest. You're very reassuring. It's my job, I said. We waited there tensely, the ground shaking with the creature's footfalls. I was so ready to head back to Jill's and get another beer. So what was that thing about King Kong? Quesada asked. Those army guys rushed me out of there before I could hear the whole plan. I don't remember anything like this in King Kong. Which one did you see? I asked. The original or the crappy remake from the 70s? Both, he said. Okay, well, there's this part in the crappy remake where they lure Kong into a trap, I said. They dig a pit, just like Crown asked me to do. The pit's not deep enough to trap him, but it's not meant to. It's only meant to drop him down to where they can hit him with the real weapon. Gas, Quesada said. Right, I said. Or in this case... I looked at the spike of the Progress Monument and fingered the radio detonator hanging by a cord around my neck. You really think that'll kill it, he asked. Doesn't have to, I said. You ever see The Omen? And then the thing strode into view at the far end of the square. It hesitated there, a half mile away, its eye stalks focused on the two of us standing side by side. It took a step toward us, then stopped. What's it doing? Quesada asked. It's sensing the trap, I said. We've got to get it moving. Give me the idol. Oh, hell no, he said, turning away from me again. I've worked too many years to get this. Okay, fine, I said, and punched him in the jaw. I'm pretty strong, stronger than your average bear, so he dropped right away. I didn't have time to check to see how badly I'd hurt him. I just snatched up the idol and started running toward the creature. Hey, you, I shouted, holding the idol over my head. You want this? Is this what you're after? The creature looked at me and leaned forward, the segmented fingers on its delicate hands flexing. Come and get it, I shouted, if you think you're big enough. I turned and ran. The thing thundered after me. It ran five crashing steps before it hit the wide strip of ground I'd weakened by digging tunnels under the surface. The ground collapsed beneath its feet. The thing tripped and fell forward. I leapt to avoid being crushed and rolled onto my back at the base of the Progress Monument. The thing was falling right toward me, the center of its chest aimed directly at the point of the spike. I'd apparently measured accurately when I'd run up and down the thing's body before. I grabbed the detonator and pushed the button, setting off the charges I had planted earlier. The creature had been caught off guard when it tripped, but it reacted quickly while falling. The armor plates on its chest drew together to form an impenetrable shield before it hit the spike. The thing crashed down onto the spike and broke off the end, leaving a jagged tip. Stone rained down around me. The creature caught itself on its arms and loomed above me. The eye stalks both swiveled to focus on me and the idol. I looked into those inhuman eyes and saw my own death. Then I heard the sound of my salvation. At first it was a gentle pattering, like soft rain, but I knew it was stone falling under the creature's back. The eye stalks rotated back to look up above the creature. I hoped I knew what it was seeing. The east side of the square was flanked by the Tsuburaya building. Its design had been inspired by the Empire State, down to the radio mast on top. The charges I had detonated had been planted at the base of the radio tower to make it fall toward the spot where I lay. At this moment, the creature saw the tower plummeting toward its unprotected back. The spike pointed down like a spear, just like the lightning rod that killed that priest in The Omen. The creature roared and snapped the armor on its back closed just seconds before the radio mast struck. It was unnecessary anyway. The tower didn't hit it point first. Instead, it struck the thing broadside, tons of steel slamming into his back, knocking its unprotected chest right down onto the jagged, broken tip of the Progress Monument. Viscous black blood squirted out of the thing's chest, spraying across the monument and me as I scrambled out from under it. The creature crashed to the ground and was still.
Digger?
Colonel Fox's voice said in my ear.
You okay?
I'm fine, Colonel, I said. It's dead. Got him right through the heart.
Good job, son,
he said.
I don't care what anybody else says, you're a big leaguer in my book.
Thank you, sir, I said, not sure just how complimented I should feel.
You want a reward, just name it,
he said. Thanks, but right now all I want to do is get cleaned up and go finish my beer. And then the thing began to move. It shook its head, then pushed itself right up off the bloody monument. It lunged to its feet, the wreckage of the radio tower crashing down behind it. Black blood pulsed from the gaping hole in its chest, and it screamed its fury at the sky. I took off running as fast as I could. The idol tucked awkwardly under my arm as the colonel's voice shouted in my ear,
I thought you said it was dead!
I thought it was, I answered. Guess he doesn't keep his heart in the same place we do. At least I made a hole. You're gonna have to do this the messy way, I guess. You ever seen Night Gallery? What? The colonel asked. There's this episode about an earwig, I said. Never mind. Just get me some grenades and a beer. Digging's thirsty work.
You've been listening to Out of His League, a Digger adventure written and performed by Tony Frazier with music by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Digger's previous adventures, Astro Monkeys and Double Secret Weapon, can be found at BanesUniverse.com. Digger's new novel-length adventure, Hero Go Home, is serialized weekly at HeroGoHome.com. Thank you for listening.